Welcome.
Welcome.
Dun dun dun.
Or
dun,
goodbye.
Dun 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 dun.
The story break.
Bum bum.
The writers.
Room
bum,
bum,
podcast. Bum. Where three Hollywood professionals have an hour to turn a humble idea into a pitch for an awesome movie.
We have an hour to turn one last humble idea into an epic pitch for one final movie.
And also, really quick, this is Freddie Wong. We may do another episode here and there, like in the future. So
don't you need to tell them that.
You don't say bye and then like stop the plane and wait. Well, I might see you again.
Do you think when they ended Futurama, they were like, well, yeah, we're going to come back with some direct-to-DVD movies.
Let
and
people
stuff
be
like
pleasantly surprised, not live in disappointment.
And we don't want to keep people in this vague, ambiguous state.
I'm Asian. You live in disappointment. You're Asian.
That's Freddie Wong. Hi, my name is Matt Arnold. Sometimes writer, sometimes director, always a dad. Hi, I'm bringing back the classics.
The classics.
I just realized that like Dorothy was like conceived at the beginning of Story Break.
Don't say that.
Like
word.
All of Dorothy's life has taken place.
You should do the math and go back and figure out what was the episode we recorded after Dorothy was conceived.
Oh, that's a good idea. All of Dorothy's life, which began that conception. No, sorry. Bad joke. Anyways, that is Matt Arnold.
We're just trying to make it easier for you to not be sad and move on from this podcast. I'm Will Campos. I'm a screenwriter.
Sorry, now all I can do is look backwards and be like, when did I conceive Dorothy? Sorry.
Let's figure it out. So
wait
let's
a
figure
second.
It out right now.
Wait a second. I wasn't around during that month. Okay.
This is a hell of a way to find out.
I need to call my wife real quick. 1 second. Okay. Look.
So we got one last episode. We've been indulgent artsy fartsy boys pursuing all of our whims, you know, at the cost of pretty much everything else this whole time. But we figured because this is our last episode, it was finally time to tackle what is, I think, maybe the most requested episode we've ever gotten consistently throughout the run of the shows. People have always been like, when are you going to do Story Break the movie?
Well, don't undersell it. We had a lot of good ideas for this episode, but like, as it always happens, like right when you give up on something, you suddenly get like a big opportunity. Kathleen Kennedy herself called up and said, hey, you guys are big now.
Hey, you need to stop.
You got that halo effect from your more successful podcast called Duns and Daddies. Story Break's a pretty big IP. Like, you know, can you guys pitch a movie of your podcast?
Yes, and then we'll make it. We're going in to pitch Story Break the movie to Kathleen herself.
She said Ryan Johnson's not really into his new trilogy, which frankly he's not going to do it. Let's be honest, he's got that Knives Out. But he is interested in doing a Story Break movie, if you can think of one. So we got to figure it out.
All right. So Story Break the movie. I guess
we separate ourselves out.
You know, the one genre we haven't tackled on this show is the genre of self-portrait.
God.
Self-analysis.
Like,
art has reflected us, but we have never reflected ourselves through our art.
See, I have to separate myself from this. I'm going to like treat Matt and Story Break as just some random character. Like, I feel like this is like an Aaron Sorkin.
What is
Sorkin,
the measure of a Matt?
What
I feel
is
like
the
this
measure?
Is like an Aaron Sorkin broadcast news, like three teens in a garage, like have a crazy idea.
Oh, are you saying this is like Steve Jobs, that movie that Aaron Sorkin did where we do like the whole thing is in real time? I'm around three story breaks around the course of our career.
It's the first podcast record, the fucking
and
disastrous.
And then the one we're doing right now, because it's the first one, a shitty one in the middle, and then the last
or the disastrous the first premiere
one,
of a Story Break movie.
Yeah, the first one's like the optimistic, like, look, we're all in this together. The second one's that second act where we all got like different ideas, and like Freddie's like, I don't want to do movies anymore. I want to do rock and roll. And Will's like, I'm the most talented one. Fuck you all. And I'm like, I got a kid now. Don't you understand? Like, I'm doing drugs.
All my drugs are about my kid.
All my jokes are about my kid. And then the third one's like,
that's such a specific genre of biopic. You just nailed.
I know.
All my drugs are about my kid.
And the third
versus
one's like,
the other type of movie, all my drugs are about my dad.
My dad, yeah. There's only two types of movies, actually.
What was the first bad Story Break episode?
I think Sonic.
I mean,
I guess
Zelda.
Episode 3 was Jumper, which was
Jumper.
Episode 3?
We just do Jumper again. The
no,
third
we're
time,
doing
bitches.
That's the second act. The first act is like the excitement. The second act is they do Jumper.
Well, like, can we zoom out a little bit?
Yes.
Like the process of what we do here, which is to
boring.
Toy. What we've described. Well, we've described alternately in the past as toiling in the story mines. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a degree of, you know, kind of workaday, head down labor and toil that we seem to even conceptualize this as. Like, is this a lightly fictionalized account? Is this a world where it's like Kathleen Kennedy is actually God?
We had Boss Baby at number 7. Sorry, I don't care what you're saying. We had Boss Baby at number 7.
That was a good one.
We peaked.
Oh. We did Boss Baby number 7?
Yeah. I mean, we did Jar Jar was our second
You know
episode.
What I gotta That's say? True. You know what I gotta say with Boss Baby? Uh-huh. Is that, boy, oh boy, did we fucking call the cultural relevance of Boss Baby before that You know what I'm saying? Like, what visionaries? For those of you who have been along this journey the entire time, I hope that your lives have been materially enriched by our vision.
Look, I think to your point, Fred, I think the question is just very simply, like, try to remove yourselves from it for a second.
Yeah.
We've been told we're good.
Freddie did that several years ago.
I did that years ago, bitch.
We've been told to write a story about three boys who started a podcast.
Holy shit, it's every podcast.
Now, this is definitely one of the more boring prompts we've ever had. That's what we tasked ourselves with. So, like, what's interesting about it?
What if you do, hear me out. Mm-hmm. Here's what it is that we've flown too close to the sun. Kathleen Kennedy has been, you know, has captured us and is holding us hostage in her fortress. And then it just turns into Arabian Nights. Where she's okay. Like, you have to keep breaking stories.
How weird that we're like,
how does Arabian Nights work? It's like the
Scheherazade,
guy
as long as they have stories,
there's like
they
a
stay
sex
alive.
Thing, isn't it? Like, we're not having sex with Kathleen Kennedy.
No,
God.
But Scheherazade was like, she was like, I'll tell you stories. It was a bargain. What was the deal?
I just remember with someone telling a bunch of stories. They kept telling stories to not die. Wasn't that it? I feel like it's just speed, but with the stories. I don't think I remember the plot. I'm writing out way more than I can chew.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is, Will.
Uh-oh, what is it?
It's that discovering his own wife's infidelity has been even more flagrant. He has her killed. In his bitterness and grief, he decides that all women are the same. Shahryar begins to marry a succession of virgins, only to execute each one the next morning.
God.
Before Jesus. She has a chance to dishonor him. And then Scheherazade shows up and she's like, I'm gonna tell you a story. And then he keeps her alive because each story, he's like, I want to hear another one the next night.
Oh, okay.
So it's three story boys who are on the brink of execution in the Disney
okay.
Wars.
Here's what it would be.
Episode 55.
Here's what it would
be. Is probably when I conceived Dorothy.
Oh my God!
Mr. Clean, fitting.
No!
So go back and listen to that one with that on your mind.
No.
Sorry, keep going.
Mr. Clean, oh no. Anyway, I saw Matt had a little twinkle in his eye that day.
Finally had sex.
So here,
first and only time. Slam dunk. Swish, nothing but net.
Nothing but net.
Never have to do it again.
All right, so it's...
I don't want to bring in, like, Kathleen Kennedy.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
I feel like we got to do this. Is like, yeah,
this is the reason I think... Because people have pitched us this for a long time, and I feel like the reason it's always felt awkward to me is it just feels so self-indulgent.
Yeah.
Like, or it just does feel
but
like...
Why
it,
not?
It's hard to write a movie. It's even, I think, easier to write a book about yourself, but it's like to write a movie to be like, I'm the star of a movie. That's what I deserve
Change
to
it.
Be.
Yeah.
Don't make it about us. Like, at the end, be surprised it is about us, but, like, we have to do a movie about three up-and-coming screenwriters, movie
well,
makers.
Why would they have to come up with a bunch of stories, right?
Is no, it, but is it's it a movie 50s? About Story Break the movie. So it's about three people who start a podcast called Story Break, right? That would be Story Break the movie. Be like a biopic, but like not a biopic, but like a fun coming of age story.
What if there was a cool heist movie and it's three of the top Hollywood script doctors?
You people are running away from exploring your inner selves. That's what's happening.
Yes, no, we should.
Three boys with a dream trying to make it in Hollywood.
Portrait. All right, who's the main character?
It's a threesome.
That's a triple hander.
Keep your hands off. Aizuken is a tonal thing.
Yeah,
you
there you
at.
Go. Yes, keep your hands off Aizuken.
Yes, all right, which Matt hasn't finished like a fucking...
Yeah, because I got a kid, which I conceived exactly during episode 555 of this podcast.
Not during the episode.
Not during, Matt.
I think I would have remembered that.
Christ.
Remember I took that bathroom break?
Matt,
stop it, Matt. Well... Here we are, the end of this, end of an era. And
hands off, Isaac.
The more
great.
Things change, the more they stay
All right,
the same.
So...
make it about...
All right, so there's...
They want to make a movie. Someone wants to make a movie.
How about you make it about three kids that want to make a movie?
They want to make a movie.
Let's just rip off Hands Off, Isaac.
Okay.
Isn't Ghost Rider... What's that one about
down.
The kids that are what? Journalists that...
Ghost Rider?
Yeah. I never watched it, though. What
the
is
TV
that?
Series?
Yeah, with the little ball.
And the three kids.
Dude, the twinkle ball.
Boy,
do you remember?
Holy shit. You're giving me some sense memory just now. Yeah. Whoa.
We were very young.
You literally put me into the parking lot of the Burien Fred Meyer, like at the age of 8. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think they were journalists. There's like a very famous like cybercrime episode of Ghost Rider that I remember being hilarious.
Is it more respectable if these kids who want to be writers are like in high school as opposed to grown men?
Now you're the one trying to steer away from self-analysis and self-portrait.
They're a bunch of fucking adults who've kept it up.
Kept it up.
Kept the dream alive.
Okay, so, all right, if we're going to talk about, if we want to get real for a second, let's get fucking real, right? Yeah. When we started Story Break, it was after Dimension 404 came out, I believe.
Was it during Dimension 404?
I think it was not. Well, look it up. When did we do the first episode? The
first episode was April 21st, 2017.
April 21st, 2017. So that would have been right. God, that would have been when Dimension 404 was coming out.
D404 release date.
Yeah, because D404 was 404.
I mean, to tell you how we feel about how D404 went down, I literally can't find Dimension 404 release date. No, this is good. This is important. If we're going to go into us.
Yeah,
you know, maybe
so,
it's indulgent, but maybe, you know, people, well, this is April 4th, like, April 4th, 2017.
Yeah, so it was coming out.
No joke, yeah, like 3 weeks later.
Yeah,
no,
so,
April 4th, they already come out.
And we've talked about the story a little bit, but so when we were all working at Rocket Jump, and Rocket Jump Film School used to do live streams.
Yes,
of correct. Like they would do like live streams of color correction, or like they would do these very cool, like they'd recreate a shot from a movie live. And my wife Cherish was like, why don't you guys write something live? Like do a live to show people what the inside of a writer's room is like.
Because we heard us ranting about Blast Corps.
We were complaining about there not being any good video game movie adaptations in the office. And then we were talking about how we would do a movie based on Blast Corps, the old N64 video game.
Which
and
we Cherish actually was, pitched in
which, by the way,
down.
And actually, this may just be us telling stories of our career. Yeah, which we actually ended up pitching, by the way, everybody.
We posted it on Twitter, but we should repost it on Twitter.
Yeah, we
episode.
Did. We came up with a whole take for Blast Corps, and we wound up pitching it later. And went absolutely
like,
nowhere.
With the Robot Chicken people, we went to like every major network.
We got the rights to Blast Corps.
We got the rights to Blast Corps. We called Rare, which nobody at the company knew.
Yeah, no,
like,
no one
on the
knew
phone,
what the
people
fuck
didn't
we were
know
talking.
What
no
Blast
one at
Corps
Rare
was.
Now remembers Blast
Corps.
Yeah,
they're like, wait, so, like, you guys want Perfect Dark? Like, no, we want Blast Corps.
Like,
and
what?
Everybody, by the way, I would say probably the most we've ever had people laugh in any of our pitches, but nobody wanted it.
Yeah.
It's completely too bizarre of a show.
So we were riffing on it, and then Cherish was like, you guys should do this on our stream. Like, and it was like, we were like, ah, I don't know. It feels like peeing in public. What do we do? But we finally agreed to do it. We had a fucking great time doing it. We spent about an hour coming up with the characters, and it was like, oh, this should be a podcast. Like, this would be really... You guys had done Face Rocker before.
Yes, which was a story entry in the ripe genre of three dudes talking about things on a podcast.
Yeah.
So,
which, by the way, I think out of everything, the funniest idea we've ever come up with on it, the only thing that I would keep from it was just the idea of making your friends OKCupid profiles for them and seeing what happens, which is good. Like a very funny, it was fun. It was a good bit.
I guess you could say this was kind of like, maybe not the height of Rocket Jump, because it was kind of like the beginning of the down.
This was like the,
2017, I can look at what the YouTube
like, to get
were.
Real, it was like right before the fall of Rome.
Yeah,
like it was like, Dimension 404, we won't get it, we're not going to spill any tea or get into any drama, but it was a very, compared to VGHS, it was a very emotionally hard show. It was a tough show to
put
together.
I would say we definitely weren't at the moment where I think any of us were really like, openly being like, things are falling down.
Yeah.
But obviously, Dimension 404 did not blow the roof off the walls of the industry or anything. And we were still hopeful. We're like, oh, we'll get a season two and all this
but
stuff.
It was, so
like,
it was a very stressful show
so like,
to put
I would
together.
Say it's appropriate to be like, I think during this time when we started this podcast, we were definitely still like at the height of like this idealistic thing. Like, oh, look, we got Rocket Jump. We're bringing in new people to do more shorts and we're going to do shows. And this is like a art, you know, whatever company with
we
the artists in mind.
Money.
You know what? We're going to do podcasts where we reveal our process and have a good time.
Dimension 404 came out.
Matt's wondering what sex feels like. Sorry. I'll stop. No more. I was trying to paint a picture of what it was like back then.
So
2017, also the year Anime Crimes Division came out too, which would be...
Again, I think this is appropriately kind of seen as like, again, I think this is like where the
and
ideas are still
lava.
There. Like,
so there was a weird, it was a weird time.
It's fitting because like, you know what this is? This is the height of us being like, we're going to do things differently outside of the industry.
Yeah.
And I think Story Break kind of comes from that vibe, right? There's this kind of like, you know, lame, you know, 30 something loser punk vibe, but it is like an element of like, ha, like, you know, we can take any IP that, you know, Hollywood throws out.
We'll
do it in an hour because we're so cool. And, you know, we don't need traditional Hollywood. We'll just do Anime Crimes Division, our own YouTube channel. And like, you know, so, we'll fund our own stuff.
So this is what I was going to get to is that I think post D404 and then again, Anime Crimes Division came out. But I think it would be charitable to describe the next chunk of years of our careers as wandering the desert. I'll put it that way.
That's fair.
Yes.
I remember there were days where, especially like after the show wound down and like a couple other projects didn't come through, that it felt like going to work because we kept doing Story Break through all of it, right?
Yes.
While a lot of other stuff was in doubt. And like going into work to do Story Break, it felt like going in like the Nostromo from Alien, like just this big, just this huge office, and it just felt cavernous and empty. I remember being like, all right, well, let's do our podcast. Let's figure it out.
While we were doing fun Story Break episodes, we were doing breaks for actual networks and things, all of which did not go well, right?
Yeah, it was just a lot of pitching, a lot. I would characterize the beginning of my career, like I remember like when we were doing Video Game High School, like being like, so worried about whether I was any good, like, you know, especially after graduating and stuff like that. And the Video Game High School we wrote, and that was like, by the time we were done with season one, I was like, I did it. I wrote something good. Like, and I was like, can I continue to write stuff that's good? Or was that a one-off thing? By the time we did Dimension 404, I felt confident in myself as a writer. And then my initial view of how Hollywood would work was just, I was like, well, everyone that is successful is just not as good as I am. So if I just get real good, like, I'll be really successful. And like, I was like, that's all it takes is just to be a good writer. And then everything else will break your way. And that, very much is not the case.
No.
You learn that really quick if you play music at all. Because the number of people who are hot shit talented gods of whatever instrument you can name who are not world famous. And you're like, oh, right. Skill doesn't have anything to do with this at all.
Yeah.
You need a baseline.
Skill is the requisite. Like, to even get into the game, you have to be a certain skill level.
Yes,
there are some fluctuations. Like, there are people that are not as good as you. There are people better than you. But also, really, like, once you're in the game, then 90% of it is luck and connections.
Well, and hard work.
But that's also a requisite, essentially. Everybody works hard.
I remember going into season one of Dimension 404 coming out, because we were also gearing up. We were pitching. Again, this was my other pride and joy was Video Game High School, the animated series.
Yes.
We've been working on it. Matt and I had written a pilot that I was really proud of that, you know, I was like, it's the follow-up to Video Game High School. Again, like, we had been basically rolling natural 20s over and over again in terms of going from Video Game High School to a first look deal to Dimension 404. And I was like, okay, so yeah, this will be the next thing. Well, I'll either have to do season two of Dimension 404 or I'll have to be the showrunner of this animated show, right? What a tough decision. I'm so stressed out about this. And of course, neither of them wound up happening. I remember, this would have been early Story Break. I remember our head of production, Brian Unovich, taking me aside because we had done three killer pitches. I was like, our script is great. Our pitches are great. We're good in a room. And every single network passed on it. And I remember Brian telling me when Netflix passed, which was the one we were really hoping would come through. And I just walked out of the office and went to my car and cried for like 20 minutes and then came back and probably did a Story Break episode. I guess I would say like, and again, we'll get back to, obviously, we're just kind of waxing this down right now.
I think this is the kind of stuff behind the scenes that I think people are interested in.
I think spoiler warning, when we get to the end of the episode, we'll probably be like, it's impossible to write something by yourself.
I remember feeling, when you're in a low point like that, like having the wherewithal to get up and just keep going about your day and to keep doing stuff, like, it takes a lot of work, but it's also like, ultimately, like, being able to do that is part of what keeps you going. Like, I remember so many times during that period, I still feel this way occasionally, where I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Right. Mm-hmm. Like what is the point of storytelling? Like, Matt's heard me go on the rant many times being like, we're just emotional drug dealers, right? Like, I'm like, we're just giving people cheap hits of emotion to distract them from the problems of the world. It's like, I go to this very dark place. I remember going to a pretty dark place after D404 kind of fizzled out and the animated show didn't go anywhere. And throughout all of that, we did a Story Break every single week.
Yeah.
And like, and it wasn't something I remember even like, you come in and be like, all right, we got to do one. What are we doing? Fucking Flow from Progressive. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
And
we had that attitude for a lot where it's like, fuck.
What are we going to do? Oh my God. So, and then you have that attitude going in, but because we kind of painted ourselves into a corner where we forced ourselves to do it, like, I would have so much fun doing them.
Yeah.
And like, we'd always come out and I'd have a smile on my face. And it was always like,
it was always a nice reminder. It became like a safe circle that despite all the shit that was going on and even like the shit that you bring into it and the shit that might, you know, come out of it,
gonna be
there's
right
this like
waiting
one hour
for you,
where
right?
you,
yeah.
Yeah. There's this hour where you remember like, oh yeah. Like again, at the end of the day, like this is why we all did this. Like it's just fun to collaborate artistically with people you like and like in a common purpose of just trying to make something good.
And
with no stakes or anything. It just like, it was fun. Like it's always, I mean, I think it's something that kind of kept us going.
Let me ask a question. Cause we've referenced this a couple times in the past. Do you feel like the story break experience for you guys, would you put it akin to like working out? Do you feel like there are muscles that are being worked out there? Do you find it was helpful in that way, or was it something else?
I think it definitely, for me, I have my doubts about the 10,000 hours theory. Like, I'll be honest. Same, like, yeah, yeah. Like, I'm a little like, it depends.
I mean, I think that a lot of people have actually debunked that.
Yeah. But I will say, like, getting your reps in, like, it helps.
Also, I'm like super good at Apex, and that took like 50 hours.
Yeah, actually. I think it's the opposite of this, is that I have put 500 million hours into Call of Duty, and I have not improved at Call of Duty at all.
I remember in Malcolm Gladwell's book, there was the guy who was like, I'm going to become a professional PGA golfer. Guess what, dudes? He got injured. He ain't doing that.
Yeah.
He quit.
It's always good to keep your teeth sharp. You know, it's always good to stay in practice. I don't know that I would say Story Break has made me, I think I've learned a lot from Story Break. I don't know if I'd necessarily say it's made me a better writer, although I think it has.
I think there's diminishing returns. I think for a while it was like, there's definitely a moment, I think, in the same way, probably, you know, like if you are wanting to be an actor or anything else, like it's good to take improv classes. At a certain point, unless you're going to continue doing improv, it kind of, you got what you're going to get from it. I say like the first year or two, just in terms of just like being able to like throw shit against the wall and be free and faster. Like, you know, we definitely found ourselves where we'd be like, right, be like, oh, let's just like take like an hour, just like fucking spitball shit. Like,
yeah.
Definitely helps.
I but think it's that's also part like,
of it. Like, at a certain point, it's kind of diminishing returns. I would say it is like working out, because even now, every time we do Story Break, it's like essentially the day's over. Like, I can't work on another story. Like, my brain's like yeah, been in like hyper focused.
Whatever it is doing, it's not akin to a muscle or working out in that way. But whatever it's doing is definitely depleting a resource in your brain.
That's true.
And yeah. That's one reason we are kind of stopping, honestly, is like, even though it's only like an hour or 2 hours a day, like,
it's an intense hour.
Yeah. In terms of like writing or if we're going to do anything creative, I'm pretty dead after Story
Break. We will say,
I just want to play video games afterwards.
It's not about like, you know, just the time it takes to record it. We've noticed that it has an overall effect in terms of just your mental processes for the day, which is interesting, you know?
It's good practice, but it's also like one of the core tensions of the show is the tension between trying to come up with a good script and trying to make a fun podcast.
Yes.
And the best shit happens when like you stop worrying about making a good script and then you start having fun and then you come up with a great idea.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Definitely. I can hear myself in the early episodes being like very intense, but like, no, it's gotta be better.
Yeah.
And it's
like,
it's a fucking hour. Just like figure it out. But the reverse side of that is it can also be like, once you know how to do a Story Break episode, it's easy to kind of like, again, there's a reason so many wacky green aliens show up. Yeah. Like there's like, you can get lazy with even within the context of practicing.
Interesting.
You
know what I mean? Will say what's one of the good things, and again, it's diminishing returns, but I think one of the things that's useful, or like, I think one of the things that this does help replicate is oftentimes you can get stuck writing or creating something because you have this idea of what is good, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, I need to make, the script's got to be this way. And sometimes the best ideas, and that's one of the things that we always talk about, like Brian was very much the third heat in the VGHS prize room. Sometimes the best ideas come from like just trying to make your collaborator laugh or whatever it is.
Yeah,
like, like sometimes like you can get into ruts that you don't even know you're in a rut yet. And like, sometimes you just need that outside force or something
to jolt you out of it.
Like, it's not even about the story, I'm just here, it's like, oh shit, I just want to make something laugh, wouldn't it be funny if Brian D did this or whatever, and then all of a sudden like that's the idea that everything bounces off of from that point on. So it's like, it's, if anything, Story Break always reminds me, there's no like science to it. Like, sometimes you can get so caught up in like this, but then every once in a while you realize like, yeah, there is, that gets you part of the way there, but sometimes the best shit comes from these strange places.
I think if I were like, okay, I'm making a Story Break movie and I want to convey like a message from it that specific is to Story Break, that I think is a good thing for people, especially artists, to know, it is like that. I'm trying to think of how to express this, but like, again, I remember having really shitty days and coming in and doing Story Break anyway.
Yeah.
And like, even the leaving that, like, it wasn't until looking back at all of it that I was like, this was really valuable. And I'm really, really glad that I did this, you know, that I kept writing, that I kept doing my art, even if it wasn't the way that I, you know, necessarily, like, it's a podcast. You know, it's like, it's not writing a screenplay, but it is like doing what I enjoy doing. And it's, you know, doing it even when you don't want to do it, and like putting the work in and putting the practice in, like, and doing it in a way that was fun and like safe to fail. Like, I don't know. I found that experience very valuable.
Yeah. I found that one of the most important, I think even Stephen King echoes this as well, but like, I think one of the most important things you can do as a creative person is to give yourself uncompromising set repeated deadlines on something. Like, even, you know, if it's get X amount of pages written in a day, or, you know, or put out a podcast episode, or, you know, in my earlier career, like a YouTube video every week. There's something about forcing yourself to go through those motions. Where Story Break was always interesting to me was that it's kind of a ersatz version of screenwriting, right? It's like, you know, realistically, you're rarely in the situation where
it's like
you
the guitar hero of screenwriting.
Yeah, yeah. But like, there's still things you can get from it. The other side of this is that there's no better substitute than doing the thing itself, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if this was the kind of thing where it was like, cool, whatever crazy idea we did, we had to bang out a first draft that month or something, right? Like, I think that's a different exercise entirely. But it is interesting in that it has, you can get stuff from it. You have to be open to it.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of that, I mean, to transition for a second, like, one of the reasons we made the jump to Heaven Heist was that I think we were all starting to get a little bored of the format. Yeah. It was like, let's do something new. Let's do something. Because I remember having this moment right before we decided to do Heaven Heist, because we'd been doing the podcast for, I think, a year or two at that point.
Yeah.
Looking down the road, I was like, okay, let's say it takes half a year. Let's say it takes, you know, what is that, 25 episodes or something like that. Would I rather have 25 episodes of this show or a completed script by the end of
it?
Like, you know, 25 new episodes, or like, you know, like, maybe we go on this journey and we take this thing. And it was like, that wound up being its own crazy kind of challenge and its own, like, that was fucking hard as hell. And I think I think I learned more from doing Heaven Heist than doing like normal Story Break. Although I had a ton of fun. Like,
I learned most from Jar Jar Binks for sure.
I mean, like, so Heaven Heist was like, Matt knows this, I'm very precious in the writer's room about like my prose, and like, it's very easy for me to get constipated and just freeze up. And there was just zero time to do that with Heaven Heist. Like, that's always been an insecurity I've had, was like, am I fast enough to be a professional writer? And then like, that put us in a situation where you had to be fast. You had to just like lock and load and go do it. And like, I think it broke down some of that fear for me. So that's another thing I'm really thankful for.
So just thinking about kind of what you're bringing, I think for me, the lesson I would take from this, and like, full disclosure, I'll just say, like, I think I'm the one that first was like, hey, we should stop doing Story Break. Like, I'm kind of done with Story Break. So I probably started introducing the idea like post Heaven Heist, or I was kind of like, you know, like, maybe you don't need to keep doing it. And I think for me, this is about, or Story Break was about, or why I do this is like, I don't want to be doing this job if I'm not having fun, as selfish as that is. Like, I only do this because it makes me happy. It's not, you know, again, I hear like, you know, my wife is very supportive. She'll be like, oh, it's important what you do, like entertaining. But I was like, it's not important. Like, I could do other stuff. Like, I could do things to help the earth and stuff like that. Like, if I'm not even like having a good time or like having fun with friends or doing it, it's like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, I only do this because I enjoy it. And I think that's how I met, you know, the people that like enjoyed it. I think if I were to look back or try to psychoanalyze Story Break, one, it came out in the time where very much separate from VJHS, we're all in it together. Like, Will was doing more D404.
Yeah, that was
like, even Freddie, like, me and Freddie were still doing such a good bit. Freddie's like pretty much stuck with like a lot of the CEO stuff. And I was kind of like off in the wilderness, like trying to help Shorts team and figure out what movie we're going to do and like starting to develop stuff. And I think Story Break
was a way
became,
of actually forcing us to hang out.
Yeah, Story Break became like the safe space for like doing the stuff I loved in the first place.
Yeah.
And I think for a long time it was that. Mm-hmm. And then especially like as Rocket Jump started like restructuring and we stopped kind of like going out for these like TV shows, and once again, kind of like us focusing on
World and the media world also is shifting.
Like, we got into this to do a feature, so we started writing multiple features. And like, for me, I think your low point was probably the VJHS animated series. I've always been kind of like the just kind of march forward, like things are gonna go like okay. Like, that's kind of how I've gone through like video game high school. Is just me being like, we're gonna do video game high school, we're gonna do video game high school. Like, how can we get that budget? Don't worry about it, we're just gonna do it. And like, we kind of fought through three seasons of VJHS with that, and like starting a company, and even like our Hulu shows, and like Lionsgate, and like the animated show not going. I was like, ah, so like, we're gonna just keep going, we're gonna keep going. But like, then we wrote our first like feature script, and I was like, yeah, we did fucking YouTube, we've done all this stuff, like, and this script fucking rocks, and the script does rock, like,
yeah,
fucking
script,
Terrace Number One is incredible, everybody's really loves it, it's just everybody's cowards, no one do it. But like, when that didn't get made, and then we did another feature, and like that didn't get made, I was like, oh
yeah, we did this.
Well, no, we had a triple punch, which was Terrace Number One went, and it was at the budget level where essentially what we were confronted with is like, you need a bankable Middle Eastern lead for this, and we're like, well, shit.
Well, I mean, for me, it's just mostly like, I just believed we were gonna, like, we were big, we were gonna get it. Like, it felt like a small budget movie that anybody else couldn't do. Everybody liked the script, it like kind of went nowhere. Then we got like another feature that we wrote for even less budget that, like,
this is the Nail House,
was
right?
gonna go for YouTube, yeah, and like that kind of fell apart.
And then, we did YouTube's the people we were talking to for it all left, and we're like, oh, cool.
There's always various reasons things didn't happen. And then we wrote like a third script, and this one's like,
we won't say what it is because we can't, but we got hired to write a movie.
Oh, yeah, then we got hired to write a movie that I'm really proud of. I think actually one of the best scripts we've written.
And then we got fired.
That's a big wet fart, which whatever, man. I won't care because we're not here. We're like, the movie we wrote was 1,000 times better than whatever the shit they had. But it was, you know, a Story Break. It was too weird. It was goofy, whatever. So like, I was like, oh, like, nobody likes the stuff that we do. But I could keep coming back to Story Break. And I was like, okay, like, this is still fun. And I think when we did Heaven Heist, two things happened. We did Heaven Heist, and I was like, this is the fun part, like actually making the, like writing a movie, like
the scene by scene, like,
because there's no stakes of like, I hope this movie gets made. I was like, it's just fun to do in the first place. Like, this is the fourth script that we wrote that like I had no.
It was the first one in a long time that felt like, because when we wrote Video Game High School, we were not thinking at all about, well, I shouldn't write it this way because that's going to be hard to shoot, or I shouldn't write it this way because it's going to be hard to make. We just wrote whatever the fuck we wanted.
Yes.
And Heaven Heist definitely had that energy too.
Yes. And I felt like you did three scripts that we wrote to like for a purpose.
Yeah.
They still didn't get made.
Yeah.
So going back to that, and then Dungeons and Daddies kind of came up too.
Yeah. So
and
I
then all of a sudden, all this, I started having fun again and like doing the things I wanted to do. And then Story Break more became like the thing that I was doing that was keeping me away from all the stuff I wanted to be doing, which is ultimately hanging out with you guys and making stuff. But I was doing that outside also.
Yeah.
So that's what kind of
it got. Well, actually, Matt and I have been talking. Freddie, what has your experience been like doing the podcast? Because I feel like if we're the Ninja Turtles, I feel like sometimes you're like the Raphael of Story Break. Like you're like the kind of
which
like,
one? Remind me. I
don't know how the fuck I've been making Ninja Turtles references for years. Neither of you get
all I know is that Michelangelo's the pizza boy.
Man, you're Raphael's like a Michelangelo cool. Raphael. Because I feel like
what's Raphael? He's the one with the size. Right?
He's the size. He's kind of like the bad boy of the group, right?
Was
like,
he the bad boy? Wait, I thought Michelangelo was the bad boy.
No, Michelangelo's the party dude.
Yeah, party dude.
Raphael is cool but rude. Give me a break. Michelangelo is the party dude.
Okay.
So like, I feel
the other thing too. Just I never understood the Donatello Leonardo dynamic. Like, are they both leaders? What the fuck?
Donatello's the nerd. He's the brain. It's like Kirk and Spock. Anyways.
I always, why I don't get, because I always thought the Ninja Turtles are not a four good duo. There's like, they're kind of all bland. Nobody remembers because they're all bland.
Anyway, so
get him, Matt.
Freddie, what has your experience been like doing Story Break?
I mean, you know, it's been interesting, you know, because I feel like you two are very much a powerhouse duo in terms of bouncing stuff off of. And I found that, like, I've been, you know, to try and give a frank assessment of my performance as a co-host, I've been at my best when I can throw the left field shit out into there. I don't think I'm as good as a guy like, in fact, I know I'm not as good as a guy like Brian Ferenczi is at that particular thing, which is why the most joyous episode, I think, was when we got Brian on for The Boys Are Back in Town, which is like maybe one of the most.
It's that, unhinged. Yeah.
That unhinged energy is something I absolutely love. And it's one of my favorite episodes of the show, which is something I want to ask you guys what your favorite episodes were. But The Boys Are Back in Town one was like very, very fondly remember that. Because it gets to these very ridiculous heights. And I think that's where Story Break was at its best, was at these very ridiculous heights. And, you know, I think that, like, looking back at, you know, obviously I'm still in the middle of the career, so to speak, but, like, I feel very much that I've chosen a path of whatever is interesting to me at any given moment. I've heard people describe my, like, life as just, like, a dog going around and just, like, sniffing at things that interest him.
By people, you mean your mom's just described that, right? That's, I don't think anybody else has described that.
But, like, the point being is that, like, I've always felt that it was like a solid podcast idea from the beginning. You know, I was like, oh, yeah, I get the premise of it. I also see from a podcast perspective, you know, like how you can generate episodes from it. It's just drawing from whatever happens to be going on. And we've done, I think, a pretty good job of that, hewing between, you know, Twitter trending topics to weird, you know, dice games and random Wikipedia articles to, you know, oh, everyone's talking about the new Fast and Furious movie because the Jurassic Park thing or whatever. It's like, okay, great. So like from that perspective, it's been very satisfying. But then from like a, you know, just a recording perspective, I've found the most use just listening to you guys and being like, oh, interesting. That's a way of approaching that. And just, I can be very quiet. I can see it in the waveforms. I can see it in the waveforms.
I wanted to ask you about that because, yeah, I definitely always feel guilty when like we're doing an episode and then Matt and I will just start doing our thing.
See, the thing is, like, the best episodes of Story Break are when I rudely butt in on that and throw stupid shit.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
And it really has a subject matter thing because sometimes I'm like, you know, to be honest, sometimes I'm like, I don't know where my weird left field shit can come in. But then other times I'm like, oh, no, this is the fucking weird, horny, dumb shit that I have in mind. So I would say, like, you know, we're like 70-30 on that. There's definitely ones where I'm like, I don't know where this is going. And also I feel lost because as far as from like a screenwriting, storytelling instinct side of things, you know, I felt that that side is very deficient in terms of my experience and skill stack. You know, I think that if I were to break down where I think I have the greatest strength, I think it's in post and it's in shaping things and seeing things objectively and trying to get to an end point with material in front of me. When it comes into the blue sky idea phase, I have found that a lot of times I have ideas, but what I've learned from this from you guys is that ideas of a thing can lead nowhere unless there's some more meat and gristle behind it that can drive the engine of the needs of a narrative.
As somebody who just wrote a script with you, I think you're selling yourself a little short. I think you're just quiet.
I do think from a frank assessment of the skill set, you know, I think where I am less comfortable is in a world of like coming up with things is easy. And I think that anybody who gets into movies and thinks about things in the movie sense, you can come up with stuff and you're like, oh, wouldn't that be fun? But the problem is a lot of times what is difficult and what I've tried my best to learn is recognizing when those ideas are just like, yes, that is a fun little dumb lark that you say, but would not work or does not have enough meat to, you know, be a thing that you could actually go out and shoot. You know,
I didn't even think about that. I think that is also probably like a good, like what's changed over like the years is like when you started Storybreak, like we had written Video Game High School and stuff, but again, it's like Video Game High School is like, again, like a, ignoring quality, it's just like a once in a lifetime thing. Like, I don't know anybody else that's going to crowdfund like $2 million to do something with no studio, no interruption whatsoever.
A miracle held together by spit and duct tape.
Yeah. But it's just like, that'll never happen again. Like in that same way.
And just to point out some things about it, because I think a lot of people don't quite understand that. Number one, to come out and have essentially full creative freedom on that show from the jump, right? Yeah. Like how many people have that right. You could point to the 70s directors and getting a couple examples, but like, that's a rare ass thing in this day and age. Number one.
And not like a single movie, like 6-7 hours of content, like done at like, you know, it still is low budget, but larger budget than like short film.
And also, I also want to point out at that time, web series and stuff like that, you've seen all of those and you've seen the short films on Vimeo and stuff like that. Nobody's doing a fucking car chase in that shit. Yeah. That's ludicrous. By the way, Cherish posted some photos from Video Game High School set, and we got to see ourselves, me without facial hair. I was like, we look like children.
Yeah.
Like, we look like fucking idiots. I can't believe we got anyone to listen to us. And we crowdfunded only because we had come into it with a head of steam of 2 years of being one of the top YouTube channels in the world. We peaked at like number 7 in terms of overall subscribers. That is... it's just very, very, very strange and rare.
What I was getting to was like Video Game High School was essentially the equivalent of like we did Story Break for an hour and then we just go and then we just went and made it. We said Heaven High School and we made it. And the rest of the career post Video Game High School is learning that.
Chasing that high.
Is learning that's once in a lifetime, winning the lottery, right?
So like, yeah.
Two kind of similar things. Like I think there's always that insecurity. It's like, can you come up with good ideas? And at a certain point, like, the idea part is no longer the challenge. Not every idea we have, but it's like, we've done 200, some are good, some are bad, but like, again, it only takes an hour. Like, I have no problem coming up, like, I'm not insecure about coming up with funny ideas. Now, like,
it starts to feel like a parlor trick after a while.
Yeah, you're like, why am I doing this?
A movie out of a pencil. I'm like, all right, you call it number two. He's always wanted to be number one.
The hard part's not even that. It's not even like the outline. Then you start realizing the more you've gone into, the more you've...
It's not even about
writing a good script anymore. Like, the hard part is
the hard
like,
part is when you take your thing and then you have to go convince someone to give you millions of dollars to turn it into something.
Yes. So the fun idea part, it still like can be fun, but it's just like
I will say, you know, I think you when you do the business side, it can be demoralizing and it can be depressing and it can kick your ass.
I mean, hell, I just saw a thing right now where they're like, yeah, Squid Game was 10 years
in development. Yeah, 10 years, right?
So like
he almost sold his life. He had to sell his computer to stop working on it.
Which we haven't done.
Yeah.
You know, we never had to sell a computer.
But my point being is that like you can get demoralized and then it is like what I love about stuff like Story Break is that it does remind you of the fun part.
Yes.
Like it gets because you need to hold on to that. Because if you can't, you're fucked.
Or you can become an entertainment lawyer.
I wanted to talk for a second to turn this into an episode of Talking Dads for a second. So I obviously like the other bit, like we wandered the desert. Story Break, you know, sort of was the trickle of water that kept me like, again, it's also like there's nothing worse than feeling alone and feeling like you're writing into a vacuum, right?
We
would write these scripts and I would be I'm incredibly proud of Terrace number one. We wrote this one called Nail House for YouTube that is, I think, fucking hysterical. And it's a one location action movie. So I think it's fantastic.
Everybody liked those two scripts. Then we wrote a third one called Lionfish that nobody liked, but I still like.
So we write a bunch of scripts. You pour all your heart and soul into it. And then in Hollywood, it just disappears.
Yeah.
It's not a novel where you can then be like, all right, I'll post this on Amazon or something. Yeah. At least it just goes nowhere and no one saw it. And like, I don't think without Story Break, I could have taken that heartbreak three times.
Don't forget that we are coming from a generation of, right, Rocket Gem was born on the back of a YouTube channel where every fucking comment, every number of metrics and likes,
this drip feed.
It's a drip feed. I mean, I remember when we first did our Kickstarter, we had an entire day where everyone just stared at the Kickstarter. Like,
I have my thoughts on whether that's a good thing for creatives or not. I don't think it is. Addicted to feedback.
I don't think it is, but that's the soil from which we are born.
Yes, right? Very true.
But I would say all artists strive for some feedback, right? Whether it's stand-up, whether it's music, like you're always looking for the live shows, you're always looking for something. And screenwriting is difficult because there's really no audience. No, the only audience screenwriters have are either people who are giving you notes or one person deciding to buy it or not. Here's my screenplay. And everybody's like, ooh, that's a good screenplay. Because it's like a blueprint.
Yeah, there's no such thing as Moby Dick with screenplays where it's like, ooh, no one really liked it, but it became an American classic that people read in schools. It's like, no. You write that screenplay, a fucking Hollywood fat cat thinks that there's no market for it, and done. It goes nowhere.
He likes it, but then he pitches it to his kid, and his kid goes, I don't know. My kid didn't like it, so I'm not going to make your movie.
That's a double-edged sword, because the other side of that is you just shit out an idea, and the kid's like, oh my gosh, I like that person, and all of a sudden you have a deal, right? Like, yeah. It can go both ways, but that's the fucking dice. Mistress.
Well, I was going to say, so Storybreak helped us wander through the desert for a long time, and then, you know, we had Dungeons & Daddies pop off.
Yeah.
And so I was going to ask, to what extent do you guys feel like Storybreak prepared you for Daddies? To what extent do you see a connection between the two of them?
I mean, I think that the time in Storybreak, and I have to give a lot of credit to a lot of the advice that Jesse Thorne gave us when we first were talking about joining the Maximum Fun Network, which was, you know, he's a radio man. Now, if I say that he's a radio man, I'm sure you'll agree. But he essentially seeded us with the ideas and like the process of like, how do you play in this podcast space specifically? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was immensely helpful. So, for example, one of the things that he said to us right away was, he was like, all your intros, you guys are all over the place in your intros. You need to come up with just an intro that's a sentence. And we sat there, we wrote it. We're like, yo.
We followed that for about a couple episodes.
No, we do. I mean, fucking says it right, but it's like,
what are you talking about? I say it right most of the time.
It was straight up like a lose the thumb moment. And then, so yeah, we came up with three Hollywood professionals that have an hour to turn a humble idea into an epic pitch for an awesome movie.
When we did Dungeons and Daddies, I was like,
yes,
same thing. We need that saga cell at the beginning. And we spent like 3 weeks word by word making sure that it was quick. It rolled off the tongue and it literally seeded a joke in there. It's Dungeons and Daddies, not a BDSM podcast. Mm. It gets a laugh. And also the confidence of like, okay, we can do a multi-track thing. I know how the audio works from a technical level. Mm-hmm. I felt incredibly confident after our time on Storybreak to be able to be like, I can produce audio out of this that is of a quality that is competitive in this space.
Yeah, I think even like the fun of like, again, we stopped doing it because, again, another sign that we were kind of getting tired of it was we stopped doing like the pitches and like we had like more kind of like sound design.
Sort of the proto version of the intros from Dungeons and Daddies is like when we would do the trailers and stuff like that.
Which was
a ton of work to do it every. Like, it's hard to do it twice a month for Dungeons and Daddies. Doing one of those a week was a grind for a while.
Yeah,
that was our old editor Cameron Covell cut a lot of those together.
Yeah, that's why we also had other help on it and stuff. I mean, now we have Chad, but like, again, it's like a different, again, that's back when we had like the Rocket Jump office.
Yeah.
A little bit. I mean, I think my whole life's prepared me for Dungeons and Daddies, but like, kind of, because like,
I mean, you did conceive your daughter while doing this.
I mean, it's more like, I always hated being in front of camera. I never want to be in front of camera, but like, honestly, the thing that most prepared me was just like doing YouTube in the first place. Like, and honestly, like Rocket Jump as a whole, like the idea of like, sell your personality, having to be on behind the scenes, like being in front of camera. Like that was all stuff I wasn't comfortable with at first, but Freddie was so good at it. Like I kind of started having just to form some sort of public persona that was like me, but you know, acceptable to the public.
Which is, I would even argue, by the way, a new development in this era of influencers that is like having the need of a public facing entity persona of some kind. It's just like such part of the way the game's played, you know?
And for whatever level of professionalism I have on audio, which is, I would argue, still not very much, like, I think a lot of that is just definitely, like, beginning with Storybreak. Just, like, I think Face Rocker, I don't think I ever listened or ever cared what the hell that was. Like, here, like, at the very least, it's like, you know, I remember a few episodes in, we got some feedback. It's like, you guys are talking over each other too much. Like, you have this. Like, I definitely tried to
be better.
Oh, you
remember when we raised hands?
Yeah,
we
raised
hands.
We
tried.
Yeah, we did it for a bit. Logan recommended it. It's like, that doesn't work. But yeah, like, I think this definitely kind of work the muscles of trying to, you know, play off of each other and improvise and things like that and just be better on mic than just on camera. So,
I thought I was going to get a more interesting answer out of that question.
I mean, it was a yes, like it helped. What we were interested.
I don't know. I thought you were going to be like, you know, like it helped me overcome my fear of, you know, vulnerability. And then,
Matt just talked about fucking his wife over the Mr. Clean episode.
Beyond that part, like I'd say directing.
I'm just being an asshole.
I was going to say directing, I think, is the thing that first That's probably why I liked it, because I'm a sociopath and will express myself through explaining the emotions of other characters. Is that like I liked, like directing's already does that, like, right?
Yeah, sure,
my style of directing is I very much like to be, as very well attested to, like, I'm a very open, vulnerable, like, I like to not physically, but I like to, like, put myself naked there first before asking the actor to, you know, be vulnerable. Like, I'll, if something sad happens,
nude on set. That's what you're saying.
No, I will explain my own personal life and, you know, get serious in order to get an actor there. So, yeah, I've always been kind of.
You're like, man, this one day, the worst day of my life, I was working with this fucking actor who wouldn't say their lines like.
Who wouldn't say fucking say the words that I wrote on the page.
Will would be a good director. Pro directing right there. You've learned the moves, Will.
He's beginning to believe.
So, okay. It feels like we've explored the territory.
This is the story break. You just heard the story break movie. It's one of those.
Hey, excuse me, everybody. I just wanted to say a few words about the beautiful couple. I've known you two for a long time, and you get along like peanut butter and chocolate. Or, you know, like comedy and culture, like Maximum Fun podcasts. Actually, they're having a block party from October 11th to October 22nd, and that's kind of like your party, right? You have a community of friends and family, and Max Fun has a community of shows and audiences that support them. You're having a new start with your life together, and Max Fun will be putting out new episodes that are especially welcoming to new audiences. So it's a great time to introduce your friends to your favorite show or jump into one you haven't tried before.
Is he still talking about podcasts?
And they're setting up a volunteer event where we can help out our local communities. Plus, Maximum Fun is going to have games, prizes, episode recs, so much other fun stuff.
What's wrong with Kyle? Is he okay?
Oh! anyways, sorry for getting carried away there. If it's all right with everybody here, let's all raise our glasses for a toast to the Max Fun Block Party, which you can learn more about at MaximumFun.org/blockparty, and don't forget to join in on October 11th.
Actually, that sounds pretty cool.
Okay, so I will say, if I was going to do a story break movie, I would probably want to do literally like something like a Before Sunrise,
like a Linklater
thing, where it was just like, again, you would write it, but it would be kind of like Lo-Fi Music Girl. I would do it like that.
It's just an exploration of story. It's like, why?
Here's a question.
It would be that there's these big life swings happening in the three characters' lives. Like, again, like the fucking anime show not going, and me being like, oh shit, like I'm going to be a father.
Oh, reflects in the story they want to tell.
I was like the hotshot YouTuber. Now I can't even get a script. All these things are happening.
I still am, baby. I'll never die.
And then, like that's all on the periphery and kind of like the Steve Jobs thing, like the whole movie's taking place before the recordings, and you get a little glimpses of the recordings, but you're getting like, you don't hear them, but there were not so much now, but there were definitely some times during like the early story breaks where like tensions of stuff
would
like
almost kill each other a couple
times.
Yeah,
would like come out and there'd be dope. Like, so like you would have like that sort of moment where it's like, hey, this isn't about story break anymore.
You can't tell because Freddie edited it so gracefully, but during the, it's the stupidest episode too, is the sensory deprivation episode.
I don't
with
remember
like
this
the
episode.
Itchy plants. It was like an episode about itchy plants where it was like, it was after Bird Box came out and we were like, what's like, instead of you can't see, it was like, don't scratch yourself or some dumb fucking thing. And I had an emotional breakdown halfway through the episode. Like I literally like, I was so stressed. I had a lot of tough stuff going on in my life at the moment. It was also like it was in the middle of us striking out over and over and over again. And I like, we had to pause the recording. I remember I went and I took a walk, like I cried it out. Like I came back. And again, like one of the things I really love about, and I think I've talked about this a little bit before on Talking Dads, but like, I'm a crier. Ever since I was a little kid, like that's an emotion I go to very quickly. Mm-hmm. And as a man, I've always been, I remember growing up being very scared of crying in front of other men, which really put a damper on a lot of my relationships, right? Because it's like, you can't get too vulnerable. Someone pisses you off and then you don't say something. You don't want to admit that your feelings got hurt because you're afraid of getting emotional. And I felt that way about you guys for a long time. Like where I was like, oh, you know, like
we are pretty macho.
Yeah, I know, right? But it's like, I was some point during Dimension 404, I think I just burst into tears in a meeting at one point. And you guys, you were both so accepting and so friendly, and like it wasn't even like, come on, you pussy, or whatever. Like it was like all the stuff I had in my head that I was afraid of. It didn't happen. So like one of the things I'm really grateful for is that we have the kind of relationship where like when things get tough, when the room gets tough, when things get intense, like we can kind of back off and find our way back to the space.
Yeah.
Like, and that's been on a personal level, like that's been a way that working with you guys and working on my art has helped me grow as a person as well, just kind of by like exposure therapy, if that makes sense.
No, but, I agree. I appreciate that. Yeah. I think so. And honestly, now that I think about it, I think in the last like year or so, since we haven't had any big breakdowns, I'm like, why are we even doing this podcast? It can't be real. There's not any emotional breakdowns. We're not doing serious work. Real art's pain. absolutely. I think like in the movie version, like in the same way that like, oh, the launch, like, you know, gets into a fight between them because like there's stuff going on. You know, as always, like any sort of band story, like we've all been this together for so long, but like, you know, we all have shared goals. We also have our own priorities and ideas and what we want to do with our careers. So like, you know, you kind of develop that as like they're breaking stories.
To me, yes, it would be like one of those like where I would set it at the Rocket Jump office when no one was there and it was just like this huge office that a whole bunch of people used to work in, and it's us coming to work to do it. And then, yeah, like I think you would play the dynamic, you'd play the tension, you know, like again, like you said, like setting up the different things that everyone's headspace individually going into this recording. And then I don't know if I would necessarily, I feel like if I was going to do a movie called Story Break that was like trying to get the gist of what Story Break is about, like I don't know if I would set it around a podcast. I could also see doing it around like, although maybe it's too much stakes to do it around like, oh, well, would you actually have a pitch for a movie and it's you're trying to figure it out?
No, the pitch of a movie would be something that we talk about during like...
Yeah, so I think that
like, right, like your low point would be like a fun thing where we're all talking about the pitch and we have something like right before the, like we get like bad news or whatever. And there's like, then as you're breaking, it's like, why are we fucking breaking this? Like, you know, like, what the fuck are we doing?
It being in the context, because I'm like, so this was going to be my next question. If this was essentially the idea is you're going to do like a cinema verite kind of thing where it's, you know, normal life imbued with drama. What episode of Story Break would you base the movie on? Just, and I'm saying like not taking what was actually going on in our lives when we recorded that episode, but like what would be the most fun?
How about we do it like jobs and pick three?
Pick three?
Like you do like, I feel like the first like one, that. And this isn't, don't read to, I mean, obviously you're all going to read into this, but like don't read to it because I'm definitely flubbing this a bit or fudging it a bit. I would do the first one's like them at like the top of their game, like in like the Rocket Jump office. And then your second one is like an empty office. And your third one's like here in like Freddy's apartment. Like,
Jar Jar, number one's Jar Jar, right? Like the start of it, I think.
Jar Jar Binks.
It's the hubris of doing it too.
Yeah, like, yes, the fun of like, yes, we come in like we're the top of the shit. Like we're going to do a Star Wars movie better than anybody. Mm-hmm. And then like that's your kind of fun attitude. And I think you'd get into that. It's like
we felt like such fucking hot shit after that Jar Jar episode. Yes. I was literally like, we should pitch this. I was like, we should fucking call, like, fuck it. Let's call Lucasfilm. Let's do it.
And then it's like you do like an artsy cut where it's like, you know, we all leave fucking high fiving and be like the fucking top of the world. And then like we leave the office door and then we come right back in. We look different. We pan and the office is empty now. We're just like walking over to the thing. It's like, all right, let's do another episode.
Five,
and we're in the middle of pitching Terrorist Number One and we just lost like whatever VHS or whatever it is. But this will all be quote unquote fictional. And then you do, I feel like the last one's Chicken Cross the Road is what I was going to say, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's about finding the art. You know, and
like literally the chicken just flies off over the ocean.
Hear me out. Okay. All
or right, that's the second one that makes
it
feel better.
No. The second one has to be something that was like, because it's to me, the whole humor of the tension in the second one would be like flow from progressive or like a real bottom of the barrel.
Saying.
Like when we did the fucking Count Chocula
rock,
movie.
Rock, paper, scissors.
No, we need one that goes bad.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not even saying that we base this on an episode that went bad. I'm just saying whatever the IP is that we're doing, and then we can do it however we want. But it's like, to me, like I love the idea of the futility of like the tension and frustration again, like story-wise I would be, it's like, okay, these characters or whatever, they're waiting for the phone call back from the agent.
I would do Crazy
Taxi, the movie, right?
There would also be Fartsy as a story about just like fucking driving around endlessly, like just constantly doing the same job
Crazy
over
Taxi's
again
good.
Crazy
Taxi, and we also didn't crack
and we
it
can't
so just,
crack
like,
it
and it's also
stupid.
Something we feel optimistic about, like we love,
like,
Crazy,
I love
Taxi.
Crazy Taxi, yeah,
and then like that tension comes out of all the stuff going wrong, and then like, yeah, it's like, well, it's a breakdown, we have to pause the podcast, and then like I get bad news, and then it's like we come back, it's like, let's just fucking finish this thing. Like, who cares if it's a bad episode.
Set to the refrain of yeah.
I would do that in the middle, and then
Pixar shoes, because we talk about toilets and butts.
To me, it would be Pixar shoes. It would be something, because to me, like, I get
because it's finding the joy once again. And we're like, it's just poop.
Like, to me, it would be, yes, it would be something like that, where, because it's like, the problem with Why the Chicken Crossroads, it was legitimately really good, so I don't know that they're, like, at least in terms of my character's arc, would be realizing the movies don't have to be good, right? Which is just, like, realizing that, look, I've been fucking writing for 10 years now, right? Like, over 10 years, like, I've gotten my ass kicked over and over and over again, and a lot of the stuff you write, like, you're like, this is the best thing I've ever written, you're like, this sucks, you have no idea. And it really is, like, the process is the fun. Like, it is the joy of it.
Especially if you're getting into movie making, the process has to be fun, because more so than any other art form, except for, you know, video games. Video games are art. Sorry, Ebert, who's dead. I'm sorry. I like Ebert. Is that, like, there is no, like, final, you wrote the last line and it's over. Like, it is a collaboration. Even directors who are obsessive about control don't have control over it all. So, like, if your end product is the only thing you care about, you're not going to...
It's also like, it's not even that it's fun, because it's hard, right? Yeah. But it is like this thing that consumes, you put all of yourself into, and you are able to, again, it's just the joy.
You have to love it. Love it's hard.
I feel like joy is different than fun, and it brings joy, but that joy is not always fun. Or it's more particularly joyful at times. So for me, like, I think that was, and if I credit Storybreak with anything in terms of my growth and my career, it is being a little less afraid to fail. Mm-hmm. Like, and not even just being less afraid, but learning to enjoy failure, you know? And that, I think, also was something that helped me prepare for Dungeons and Daddies, in that the wild left turns, and, like, again, in my head, you know, I think it would have been very easy to come into Dungeons and Daddies and, like, come up with my clever scheme and want it to go perfectly, and then get frustrated when it goes off the rails. And then I think Storybreak helped prepare me for, like, when things would go off the rails in Dungeons and Daddies, you'd be like, no, this is where it's going to get fun. Like, this is where, like, it is often through the failure, it is often through everything blowing up, that the truth, the really good thing, reveals itself. So, like, the learning to just kind of embrace that as part of the process, I think, has been really, really valuable.
So then we do Pixar's Butts and Toilets, I will say, or whatever.
The reason I would say Pixar's Toilets, I do think Pixar's Toilets and Butts is the hardest I ever laughed on the show.
Yes, I'd say that's probably, like, the hardest I ever laughed. I still think about Freddy sucking his dick before pooping or whatever, because he can't pee poop with his
dick. It's also Freddy, like, to me, like, I'll make a joke like that, and then I get so scared that people are going to think I really do that I immediately back off of it. Yeah. And then what's good to that, Freddy to this day has not admitted that that's not how he actually poops.
Oh, it's the best.
But refinding the joy in, you know, why we got here in the first place. Like,
it was Pixar's shoes. Toilets and Butts was just the intro.
I know, that's the other thing, is it's so, what was the movie we did sucked? Like, I don't even remember what the shoe movie was about. Like, as a road trip or something.
It was a less good version. We did it better with the banana.
I would either do Pixar's Toilets and Butts, or if I would do the banana episode. The Mad Libs banana episode is, I think, the second hardest I ever laughed doing anything in my life. Fucking insane. Sanity.
And there's something fun about, like, you know, I would say the weird thing that we've had, and if we're gonna be personal or serious about it, is, like, the weird journey we've had compared to, like, other people who get into this industry and stuff, is, like, I feel like we hit high early, and then we've had to, like, find, like, again, be totally, like, we're in a very still privileged, like, lucky spot.
But
we're still, like, it's like almost rock and roll.
We
like,
didn't want to do a Storybreak movie. Everyone else wanted us to do it. Yeah, yeah. So if you don't like our privileged story, it's on you.
But it's a different, but it's like you start in this, like, big, you know, office, like, top 10 fucking YouTube, like, hey, we're fucking hot shit. Like, we're just doing Storybreak because we're fucking good at it, to, like, refining the love and just being like, this is, like,
that's exactly what it is.
It would be like, you know, it's not like I discovered this, like, through Storybreak only, but, like, yeah, I think the ending is, like, the understanding. It's less the thrill and more just, like, the contentment I have, being like, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life.
Look,
like, this is who I am. Like, I want to tell stories in this medium, and I love doing it. And whatever the world throws my way, or however we do it, like, in the same way, like, you know, I have my wife as my partner and my kid. Like, I have you guys. Like, it's like, I want to keep doing stuff, like, with the people I love. And, like, that's why we do it.
And it's also, like, I think it's... screenwriting is so often considered a lonely pursuit, and, like, again, like, I have so much more fun writing with other people.
Yeah, let me just say, thank fucking Christ we didn't
last me really right here.
We didn't end on a bad one. Okay.
Oh, okay. My goodness gracious. Well,
that's kind of a movie.
Yeah,
but hey,
I really don't, but it's like, I wouldn't trade. Again, VGH just came out when we were, like, what, 25, something insane like that. I wouldn't trade that experience for anything in the world, but I do think you're right that I think the movie would be very much explore, like, the, like, we got really fucking lucky and we hit. Yeah, again, it usually takes a long time before someone gets something like we did right away. And then like you realize it all. I remember feeling so guilty about that. And then it's like, no, it all evens out in the end. Like everyone has to pay their dues. You just either, you either going to pay them. And it's not like, well, you other people have to suffer. So you far, it's just life is going to catch up.
If I was going to talk about the relationship I have with like, you know, this medium, it's like, I don't think you can know if you truly love something until you've gone through hard times with
it.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
And like,
until
I didn't have any
fucked you over.
Yeah. I didn't really have any hard times in my initial career of like, I want to be a filmmaker. Like I wanted to do it. I had fun in high school. I met Freddie and like we did YouTube right away. And then we did Video Game High School. I was like, yeah, I love this. Of course I do. And then it got hard. It's like, wait, do I love this? And then it's like, yeah, I do. Like this is what I want to keep
That's
doing.
That's exactly what it is.
Even when it's hard.
Ugh, it sucks.
What sucks?
I love writing.
Yeah, you fucking idiot.
It's so fucking hard. You're
fucking morons. We're a bunch of idiots. I'm fucked. Are you kidding? I like movies so much. I dream full movies.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is going to be it for Story Break. Wow.
There's been a real deluge, a flood of fan art.
Oh, I got a whole bunch of people I want to
ride.
So, guys, I'm getting a little emotional.
The final fan arts.
By the way, no more fan art after this. We're closing the account. So
oh, no, I'm going to retweet everything.
I'm kidding.
No,
Will's finally quitting Twitter.
Yeah, this is actually Will's Twitter quiz.
This is just in case you thought Freddie had the patience to do this Twitter story break, it's me.
No, we had a sad.
That's not, no, Freddie would do it for a little bit.
Yeah, do it for a little bit. I'd find a way to automate.
We have so many amazing things to talk about.
Oh, the whole, and the Facebook group too. Wow.
Yeah, and a bunch of stuff in the Facebook group. So, let's see. Thanks to A Cloud Shape for sending us a really lovely picture. Oh my God. I'm too emotional. Someone else do it.
Somebody did a really nice audio thing that I already got my emotions out. Oh, this. Well, now it's gonna make me sad looking at all this. Okay. All the fan art here. Okay, I want to draw some fan art of my favorite Story Break episode since it's wrapping up. Will's first story. It gave me such a middle
school.
Ooh,
that was a good one.
That was a good one. That was your dragon.
Yeah, the dragon story. This piece from A Cloud Shape is so fucking
cute.
This is
so good. This looks like straight up like the cover you'd use. This is very good. It's like, it's just, I don't know how to describe it. It's just beautiful art of these two kids. With a little, is that a little dragon tail? Oh, yeah, because it's a little part dragon. It's cute. That was, Will, you're really good at this. I don't know how to do this. A cloud shape.
All right, Matt, I've recovered emotionally. Literal, you can give
wait,
me the
no,
thing
now
back.
I'm on this. Quartz commissions open DM. So DM Quartz if you want to get a commission from them, which you should, because they're very good at it, because they just did fan art about Jar Jar. That is, this is very good. It's Vader looking at a picture of Padme. It's like very impressionistic and like got beautiful flowers. That's great. It's just very beautiful. MC Trash King Art, or Mick Trash King Art is probably what it is, attempting to draw the droid with the most attachments. Oh, our girl Nate38. This is incredible. This is like, you guys had those illustrated Star Wars books that had the fucking blueprints of like vehicles and stuff.
What?
Star Wars Essential Guide to Vehicles and
Essential
Vessels.
Essential Guide to Vehicles and Vessels?
All the schematics and blueprints of the cool Star Wars ships. This has very much that energy.
Oh, my God. Yeah, very much that energy of Nate38. Just an awesome breakdown of this droid. Different head shapes, too, and everything. Very cool. Oh, my God. Yeah, Michael Rice did this incredible Sniper Island poster.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that was a cool
so
ass
good.
Poster,
very fucking so
good.
Many little details, but, like, the island is, like, the shape of a sniper, and they, like, even labeled all the different, like, terrain and set pieces. Awesome. Freaking awesome poster. Sill, and then like a cat shape. I've never seen somebody do a cat with this, like, Atsy art. This is very cool. Axie art? How do you say that?
ASCII art.
Meme template based off of the Garfield's Internet Guide to Digital Citizenship. Very fun. Definitely look up Garfield's Guide to Citizenship. It's very good. James No Last Name did this incredible Speed Racer 2 poster. Oh, it's so cool. That looks like the frame from Cars 3.
It's like the Cars 3 poster.
Very cool, but done with the Mach 5. Awesome. Trace Markins did a very fun piece of fan art that says, I can't eat food. I miss my wife, and it's Darth Vader, which pretty much sums up Darth Vader.
I think my two favorite lines I've ever written, one are, I do not enjoy fruit, and then from Duke Nukem, a sports car is like a kid you made with your dick.
Thank you for Tom Lum for doing an awesome Nickelback song.
Oh
for
my God, this was incredible.
James Bond, Die
this
Another
is
Day.
So good. It's,
or not Die Another Day, Die Another A.
It's like, look at this photograph, but it's Nickelback doing a Bond theme. It's perfect. It's amazing.
Sam Archangel, been around with us, I think, since the beginning. did a great poster for Killing Jim Davis that had Home Alone and John Wick and Garfield.
Was
great.
Sam's post was very, very touching because he wrote, like, he's like, this very sweet message to me. Like, I've been listening since the beginning. I really love the podcast. Like, thank you so much for inspiring me. And then the poster, like, you realize what a fucking dumb, it's John Wick and Garfield. And it's like, if you saw this out of context, you'd be like, what idiotic podcast does this person listen to?
Yeah. And then finally, we had a really nice, Commissions Open did a really nice message to us too, just like, a lot of nice love pouring out as we were saying we're doing our final ones. Should we talk about somebody who did a really nice video?
Oh my gosh. So Robbie Alton, yeah, who's done a bunch of musicals for us over the years, put together an incredibly touching tribute to the show, including a bunch of messages people recorded for the end of the song. And so we adored it.
Yeah.
It was incredibly sweet.
I listened to that, like, it was like very late at night. I was about to go to bed, and then I saw that Will had posted because we were just recording some Dungeons and Daddy stuff. So I got that little dusty in my house there. And I will say that the thing I loved most about the song was he kept changing
the day the show comes out.
Every refrain, it went from every Friday day, and then it was like every Saturday. It's like every Monday or whenever. It's like, sorry.
So thanks to Robbie. Thanks to everyone who left us a message in Robbie's song. It was really, really made my night.
Yeah.
That is all on our Twitter. You can also check out our Twitter, twitter.com/RJStoryBreak. You can also check out our Facebook group, bit.ly/StoryBreakFB. I'm going to keep running those accounts. I'll be checking in and, you know, liking stuff and throwing likes.
We got to keep our media presence up for when we got big
projects
coming down the line.
There's one thing that can never die. It's your social media presence. Make sure you schedule some tweets and get some hootsuites and
some final thank yous I'd like to run through. So thanks to my wife Cherish for urging us to do this in the first place,
because
it's
you,
been like such an amazing 4 years doing with you guys. I'm so glad we decided to make that decision. Thanks to our original editor Cameron Covell, who's off doing his own stuff, kicking ass in Hollywood. We love you, Cameron. Thanks to Chad Ellis, our rock, the fourth member of the team. Thanks to Travis Reeves as well for helping us out over this last year.
Also, John Carman and Benji Dolly from back in the Rocket Jump days helped out on editing and producing this thing back in the day.
Maximum Fun Podcast Network, of course, timeless advice that Jesse Thorne imparted to us, and also all the other great shows on that network. Thanks to Travis McElroy, too, for like making that
Travis
introduction.
Was the first. He got us in the door. Max Fun.
He came to a game night. We're like, hey, we kind of want to do a podcast. Could we do Max Fun? He's like,
Travis, who must hear this from literally every person that talks to him on Earth. Very gamely made the connection for us. Finally, I would like to thank all of our amazing guest stars.
Yes.
So thanks to Alex Lemley, Elise Willems, Anthony Birch, Ashley Birch, Beth May. You guys know Beth?
Yeah.
Beth May, Duncan Jones, Riley Rose Critchlow, Duncan Jones, and Jimmy Wong. And if I missed anybody, please let me know. We'll double check before we post the episode. Finally, thanks to you guys.
Thanks to you guys.
Thanks, Will. Thanks, Freddie.
And thanks to the players for listening.
And thank you to everyone who sent us fan art over the years. And thanks to everyone who has listened to and supported the show.
And if this show inspired you, I know it seems like a lot of people listen to this already. It's like, just
give us 5% of the gross profits
want a cut.
Welcome to the industry.
Welcome to the industry, kid. 5%.
You love it. Just keep it. Just find what it is about it that you love. There you go. There's a Matt phrase to end this with.
If it is what you say, it will work.
Yeah, if you say
it is what you say,
I keep doing it.
Look, what's that line from Rushmore? They ask him, what's the secret? And he says, you have figured out, do something you love every day. And for me, that's going to Rushmore. Well, what I love every day is spending time with you guys. Yeah. And so, yes, we've heard a lot of messages over the years from people who are artists, who are writers, who are inspired to, you know, become filmmakers because of us, which again is just mind blowing to me. But the road is tough, but, you know, if you have love in your heart and you have people that you love that you make stuff with, you can always find your way back to that joy. That's what Storybreak has taught me, and I hope it can be something that teaches you as well. Good luck. Write the fucking thing and go kick ass.
So for one last time, my name is Freddie Wong.
I'm Will Campos.
My name is Matt Arnold. Bye.